I know. You can't. He can't. I know. I asked for her as my maid. I asked the mother for my name day present. Just while Yavin is away, may I have Salo? And she said no. It was impossible. I have never asked for anything. Oh, Salo. Salo. You must get sick. You must starve again. Get thin and ugly like me. I didn't understand. Sotor couldn't comprehend my incomprehension. Salo did. She kissed Sotor's cheek and turned to me and hugged me, saying, "Don't worry, Gav. It'll be all right. You'll see." And she went off, back to the chambers of the Wellborn and the Silk Rooms. And I went back to the slave barrack, puzzled and worried, but always coming back to the belief, the sure belief, that the father and mother and ancestors of our house wouldn't let anything go really wrong. Part 2, Chapter 7. I'm lying in the dark in a strange, strong-smelling bed. Not far above my face is a ceiling, a low vault of raw black rock. Beside me lies something warm, pressing heavily against my leg. It raises its head, a long, gray head, grim black lips, dark eyes that gaze across me. A dog? A wolf? I remember this many times. Remembered waking up with the dog or wolf pressed close beside me, lying among rank-smelling furs in the dark place with a rock ceiling. A cave, it must be. I remember it now. I'm lying there now. The dog gives a whining groan and gets up, steps over me. Someone speaks to it, then comes and crouches beside me and speaks to me, but I don't understand what he says. I don't know who he is, who I am. I can't lift my head. I can't lift my hand. I'm weak, empty, nothing. I remember nothing. I'll tell you what happened in the order it happened, as historians do. But there's deep untruth in doing so. I didn't live my life as history is written. My mind used to leap ahead, remembering what hadn't yet come to pass. Now, what was past was lost to me. What I tell you now, it took me a long time to find again. Memory hid from me, and buried itself in darkness, as I lay buried in that dark place, that cave. It was early in the morning, in the first warmth of spring. The open inner courtyards of Archimonde were cheerful in the sunlight.
"Where's Salo?" "Oh, Salo and Rhys both went off with Tormdi, Gav."
"With Tormdi?"
"Yes. He took them off to the Hot Wells last night, pretty late."
Folly was talking to me. Folly was the gate guard to the Silk Rooms. She sat in the western court with her spinning, a heavy, slow-spoken woman, who had long ago been one of the father's gift girls. She made a reverence whenever she spoke of the father or the mother or any of the family or any other well-born family. She worshipped them as gods. People used to laugh at her for it.
"Folly thinks they're already ancestors," Ymir said.
Folly was a foolish woman. What foolish thing had she just said, bobbing her head when she said Tormdi? That Torm had taken Rhys and my sister to the Hot Wells? The Hot Wells belonged to Coric Runda, son of the senator, Granok Runda, the wealthiest and most powerful man in the government of Etra. Korik had wanted to marry our Astano and failed, but seemingly he held no grudge. Lately he'd become Torm's friend, or patron. Torm was always with him in his circle of young, rich men. Young, rich men could live the high life, now that Etra was free and prosperous again. Endless feasts, women, drinking parties that ended up as riots in the city streets. A strange friendship for Torm, it seemed to some of us, with his stiff, grim ways and his warrior's training. But Korik had taken a fancy to him, insisted on having him. And the father approved of the friendship, encouraging it as a good thing for the family, for the Arca interest with the House of Runda. Young men would be young men. There would be women and drinking and so on. There was no harm in it. Nothing would go really wrong. Tib, apprentice cook now, followed Hobie about like a dog when Hobie was at Archimonde, and Tib told us the stories Hobie told him. Korik and his friends liked to get Torm drunk, because he went crazy when he was drunk, and would do anything they dared him to do. Fence with 3 men at once, fight a bear, tear off his clothes and dance naked on the Senate steps till he fell down in a foaming fit. They thought Torm was wonderful, Hobie said. They all admired him. To some of us, it sounded as if they used him as a clown, for entertainment, like the dwarfs Korik kept as wrestlers, or his half-witted, one-eyed, giant bodyguard Hearn. But it wasn't like that at all, according to Hobie, as related by Tib. Hobie said that Korik Runda took lessons in sword-fighting from Torm, treating him as a master of the art. He said all Korik's friends respected Torm. They feared his great strength. They liked him to run wild because then everybody feared him and them.
"Torm-di is young," Evera said. "Let him have his fling while he's young. He'll be the wiser for it when he's older. The father knows that. He had his wild days, too." The Runda estate called the Hotwells was a mile or so from Etra in the rich grain lands west of the city. The senator built a grand new house there and gave it to his son Korik. Hobie told Tib all about it, and Tib told us. The luxurious chambers, the silk rooms full of women, the courts full of flowers, and the wonderful bathing pool in a back court. The water came up from a hot spring and was always the temperature of blood, but it was transparent blue-green, and peacocks spread their plumage beside it on pavements of green and purple marble. Hobie had been there many times as Torm's bodyguard. All these young noblemen had bodyguards. It was the fashion. Korik had 3 besides the giant. Torm had bought a second one recently. The bodyguards were invited to share the women in the silk rooms at the hot wells, to take their pick of the food and the women, after their masters, of course. Hobie had swum in the warm pool. He told Tib all about the pool, about the women, about the food, minced livers of capon, the tongues of unborn lambs. So, when Folly said to me that Torm had taken Rhys and Sallow to the hot wells, though my mind seemed blank as if I'd run into a stone wall and been stunned, I went after a little while to the kitchens and looked for Tib. I thought he might know something from Hobie. I don't know what I thought he might know. He knew nothing. When I told him what Folly had said, he looked taken aback for a moment, dismayed. Then he said, "There are a lot of women there. The Rundas keep dozens of slave women there. Torm just took the girls there to have a good time." I don't know what I answered, but it made Tib go sullen and defensive. "Look, Gav, maybe your teacher's pet and all, but remember, after all, Sal and Rhys are gift girls." "They weren't given to Torm," I said. I spoke slowly because my mind was still blank and slow. "Rhys
is a virgin. Sallow was given to Yavin. Torm can't take them out of the house. He can't have taken them there. The mother would never allow it. Tib shrugged. Maybe Folly got the story mixed up, he said, and turned away to his work.